Good morning. Today is Friday, the 3rd of September. Joining us this morning is Miles Slattery from the City of Eureka. Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I am here and you are there, and we're staring down a three-day weekend, so it portends to be positive. How's that?
I completely agree.
Yes, yes. All right, are you ready for your question?
I am. I came close last time.
You did indeed. You did indeed. I got a fishing one and one that is not a fishing one.
Just to not go with the unknown, I'll go with the fishing one.
All right. Why is something that's deliberately misleading called a red herring?
Oh, shoot. I know this. Come on. I can't remember. I think I learned this back in college. Reason.
In the 17th century, criminals fleeing from the law found that they could throw the policemen's bloodhounds off the scent by dragging a piece of cured, strong-smelling red herring across their trail. Hence the expression.
And I would say that was quite effective, knowing what herring smells like.
Yeah, yeah. So you took a fisheries class? Is that what you're indicating?
Yeah, I was a fishery biologist at HSU.
And you didn't remember that?
I'm old. It used to be just a short-term memory. Now it's the other one.
Yeah, yeah. But you forgot what it's called. I get it. Okay. Hey, I had a couple people ask me this weekend. I don't know if it's kind of running around in the subcurrents of Humboldt County, but whatever happened to that hotel resort spa that was going in on South Broad, well, on the south end of town by where Lithia is, the old W&W mobile home sales. Is that still percolating, or did that kind of fade away?
It kind of fade away. I mean, I think that, there's some pre-permitting that was done a very long time ago, and there was discussions with the coastal commissions about where we were at with that. And at that point in time, there was an applicant from out of the area. Currently, there isn't. I think the property is... since then changed hands. But right now we don't have an official, application or anything in for it. I do know that the old chamber property on Broadway is going through its paces to have a hotel be put there.
Yeah, I was wondering about that location also, because I know there was a lot of falderall about that and excitement. It was going to clean that corner up and maybe that part of Broadway, et cetera, et cetera, and then it just kind of is sitting there and gets mowed every once in a while.
Obviously now Food for People is there as a temporary location.
Right.
But the hotels who we have an exclusive right to negotiate with that property are going through their steps and their requirements to get in place to put the hotel there. And so right now they're dealing with building design, and currently just had emails back and forth with our fire marshal to go over the plans. They're working with engineering on our plans for stormwater treatment and those type of things. So it's pretty far along.
It's just that we are aware of the process, and that's why it seems like nothing's going on, and people were hoping to see some physical activity a little bit earlier than what might have been practical.
Yeah, a lot of things had to happen there. They purchased the property adjacent to it, and that had to happen. Then there had to be a lot line adjustment that was done as a part of the project. So, yeah, there was some preliminary work that needed to be done before they can get into the plans and specs and move forward.
Well, and it's fortunate that the building was there for the Food for People folks because of their challenge that they have up on 14th Street.
Yeah, it's been great for them. We've given that place, for free, and they're starting their construction project up there. That would be a lot. That's kind of, I wouldn't say that's holding us up, but it's kind of worked out well so that they can still have a place to be. They're having some delays because of, all the steel issues and metal issues that we're having right now. But that's going to be going forward as well soon.
Are you guys experiencing any issues with a lack of being able to get access to resources for some of the projects, the summertime construction season projects?
We're working on 2030 right now, and it's preliminary. We're doing the design.
That's the park. That's the park, not the year.
Yeah, excuse me, 2030 park. That was
thank you.
That one is in the design phase. That design phase should be finishing up sometime, in the next couple of months. And then we'll put that out to bid at the end of the year. So if we're still having problems next year, the bleachers and the things that are going to be going into that project could be delayed, but we're not there, quite there yet.
Is there any infrastructure that's necessary for the park enhancements that you're looking to, or either the curbings or the sewer, the water, lights, that kind of stuff that are being done at this point, or is that too early?
No, we have a pretty good conceptual design. The drawings are being made for the construction plan, so we know where things are going. We had a big public outreach meeting at the park last Saturday. There was over 100 people there, so that kind of finalized the locations of things, and so yeah, we'll need to relocate some utilities and add utilities for the restroom and concession stand area. That's going to be moved out from behind the home base and be out in the park more. So yeah, and then there's going to be lighting, and it's a pretty impressive project. I mean, we got $6 million to do it, and so it's going to be a complete makeover of the park.
Does that include a lot of fertilizer for the grass?
It will have automated irrigation, which is few and far between in our facilities, and we're trying to get that into all of our parks. That'll help out significantly.
Does that have long-term, maintenance issues? Or is that really kind of a turnkey, and it's not going to take a lot of effort after once it's up and going?
Oh, it's going to be night and day. I mean, right now we're on quick couplers, which require you to go out there, put the quick coupler in the ground, twist it, and then run, rainbirds all over the place.
Right.
And so it's, when it's automated, not only is it a water conservation measure because you can water in the middle of the night and have to water less, but it's also a huge maintenance relief because
we have
a lot of turf area in town.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very, very exciting stuff. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery, manager for the City of Eureka. Miles, the road work seems to be going on. I've had some people say, boy, it's kind of nice to have roads again, having pavement, instead of speed bumps. We've been employing the bizarro dimension version of speed bumps, which are potholes, is the traffic calming approach here for so long. It's nice to have the flat. What kind of feedback are you getting?
It's been really positive. As a matter of fact, we had a paving job that wasn't really funded through Measure H, but it was a part of 14th Street when that was going through, and the contractor there was a little bitter, and they were willing to honor the same prices. And so what we did, so we can kind of expedite our capital improvement project as it relates to streets, is we did a change order with them. So we added like $1 million of work that can get started now rather than waiting until next year. So they're going to be moving into that phase of the project soon as well.
Was that the pipes at the dip there?
Say that again?
Is that associated with the pipes that were placed at the 14th Street dip?
Some of that is, yeah, but that was a part of the original project. We're doing other roads that were supposed to be done, later in the fiscal year, and we're doing them now, starting soon.
Now, is 14th going to get completed up to West? Or
yep.
Okay, so that would be part of it. On Henderson, lot of disruption through that area. Are they on schedule?
They are on schedule, and it's kind of difficult because, well, one's had some delays and the other hasn't. So there's two projects going on there. There's the Henderson Street Improvement Projects, which are the sidewalk work and those type of things that REO's doing. And then there's the basically the utility / paving project that's going on. The utilities and paving project has been delayed a little bit, so there's been some crossover in those two projects.
There was a thought that I had, and I don't know why it took me so long, but you know, in so many other areas, the work is done at nighttime so that the traffic doesn't get disrupted, kind of like what 101 is doing down by Humboldt Hill, or is being done on 101, rather, down by Humboldt Hill. It's a 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. kind of a work schedule rather than in the middle of the day. Was that ever taken into consideration as an option through some of these commercial areas where there is an awful lot of traffic that is being diverted, and obviously the impacts to the businesses as well?
You know, we do that on a case-by-case basis, and I would say those projects that are done like that is because there's no other alternative due to lane closures and those type of things. We did have some disruptions and addressed a lot of complaints from business owners down there. I was on speed dial with Jack for a while there, but I think that we were able to alleviate a lot of the concerns. There was a portion of the time where pedestrian traffic was having problems, but we alleviated that as quick as we could. So if we can do it without having to do it at night, it's better. Sometimes that could lead to extra costs associated with it, but depending on the situation.
Well, I'm thinking of Old Town also. You know, those... There's a number of areas there that are starting to kind of get a little rough on the edges. So, you know, it's going to be coming halfway shortly. It was one of those, we were driving somewhere, and at nighttime they had all the work crews out there, and I just realized that isn't something that happens in our area that often.
No, yeah, we typically try to do it based on season. Like, if, you know, we try to avoid certain busy parts of the season from doing projects in our commercial areas. And typically, because of the way our street structure is, there's ways that you can close small portions of roads and get people to the same pretty much. We could look into it more depending on what the project is, but typically our projects have alternative routes to get you there.
Gotcha. With the bulb outs that are going on, how many more of those are anticipated?
I'm just going to say every single corner in the whole entire city of Eureka is going to be done so that people can call me. No, they truly are traffic calming measures. You know, people are just disappointed with them because of, you know, trailers and having to pull wide and those types of things. And unfortunately, that is the intent of those bulb outs. Hodgson and H has been one that's been called upon frequently about that, and that's where we do have a lot of complaints of people speeding. The intent is to slow people down, take wide turns, pay attention, sometimes even potentially having to go into opposing traffic in order to make that turn, but it causes people to slow down.
One of the issues I had, it was a Booner and S, when they put the city put in a turn lane. Didn't widen anything, just dropped another lane in there. I've not seen too many fender crunches with those turns, but if you put a bulb out in there also, there really is not enough space for some of the regular rigs. Henderson and F has got the same scenario there. Is there going to be restriping or maybe making one street a one-way and another one-way so that traffic really can make it through safely?
Yeah, we're looking into a lot of that. You know, obviously, I was joking when I said we're going to do this, but we're definitely not. It's in those areas. You know, Henderson's a perfect example. We have a lot of pedestrian traffic. We want people to slow down, so it's a pretty good place to put it. another one could potentially, you know, where we're having a lot of speeding issues and we don't have the enforcement to deal with it, is 7th Street. We haven't made that decision yet, but there's areas where you have a lot of pedestrian traffic where Booner and S is not one of those.
Except for this thing called Zane. I got you. I'll let you recoup during the break. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
Keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka City Manager Miles Slattery. Miles, a lot of the challenges, I think, in the area, and it's, I know it's kind of a perpetual thing, but in the areas where we can see some of the homeless encampments happening now, and the one that gets, I guess, for me, that's the most visible, other than the challenges that the Office of Education has, is the... I'm going to use old language, so I'm not sure if you remember where they were or are familiar, but the old bazaar or disco property, I don't know who's out there now. Payless Mall 101 was there on that frontage road. I don't know if it's 6th Street or 7th Street or whatever it is, but you can see it from the highway as you're headed towards the the Slough Bridge on the right side there. That seems to have become now a new haven for folks that are so inclined. Who has the responsibility of that? Is that the city? Is that the state?
We worked with the state on that, so that is Caltrans property. There's a private property owner over there, too, but the one that's more visible is Caltrans property. They have a process to address encampments, and it's clearly a lengthy one, but we went through that process. We did get rid of those on both sides of 6th Street there. About 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think there's been another one that's come up, and we'll work with them to address that. They have to go through their headquarters, and they have a lot of protocols. I think we have that protocol down now, and we've offered up our help. We send EPD, our CSET folks out there to provide notifications, and then we send our Uplift homeless outreach workers out there to provide services. And those are the components that they need in order to address the encampment issues, and then they need to store the private property and stuff like that. But I think we have a system down now that if and when that comes back, we'll be able to address it more quickly. This last time took a while, but we did end up working through what they need to get done and provide them what they needed for help in order to get that taken care of and provide services for the people that are out there.
Yeah, that whole neighborhood, you know, across the street you've got that other area that is kind of down, tucked down, that has been used. You've got the fenced area that seems to be just more of a physical challenge for these folks to get into, down the old Cooper farm, the orchard that's down there between Humboldt Area Foundation, jeez. HCOE and Myrtle and 6th and the other side where the school has got that facility. Is there any way to treat those three properties as a single entity and do something that is long-term, whether it's getting rid of the trees and making it park-like so that it's all open, or doing something, and I guess in coordination with Silvercrest also, because they've got their little green belt that's there as well.
Yeah, so as a part of that project where we, you know, fixed the drainage across Myrtle there, we put in for years, back in my community services day, we put in for grants, fisheries restoration grants, in order to do that. And accompanying that, we had an extension of our trail system. So we were planning on putting an official crosswalk there, having the trail system come over to that property so that you can have connectivity from Cooper Gulch over to the waterfront trail. So we still have that plan in mind. And like you say, to turn it into more like a park-like feature with trails going through it and having a more main trail that goes through there to get you over to towards Tidd Street. So we're still looking at grant funding to do that and open that up. We have, you know, approval letters from Humboldt County Office of Education in support of the project, and we're definitely trying to, continue to get grant funding to do exactly what you're talking about.
Now, is that a Caltrans issue? Or are they a partner on that? Are they signed off on? Because, yeah, it seems like they and the Coastal Commission oftentimes are pointed to as the two areas that are perhaps because they're elected boards and things of that nature or appointed boards, that it's more challenging than just dealing with the issue at hand?
Yeah, for that, those properties there are owned by Humboldt County Office of Education, so we would have to deal with the Coastal Commission kind of, you know, with the whole eucalyptus tree issue and stuff like that. But what's beneficial about trails, and I don't know about beneficial, but what you can do when you provide nature viewing opportunities is you have the ability to fill wetlands. That clearly is all a wetland. And so when we make these park improvements and put trails in there, we're allowed to fill wetlands, remove species, do things like that to kind of limb things up, make it more park-like, as long as we mitigate for it. It's the same thing that we did with the waterfront trail. We had a lot of impacts on wetlands and stuff like that. We just had to mitigate for those impacts. And so we would have to deal with the Coastal Commission because that is in their appeal authority there. And so we would just have to mitigate for any impacts there. But as far as property owner-wise, you know, we don't have any plans for the Caltrans property that's on the other side of V Street there. It's more just a HCOE property that's between Myrtle and V.
So how do you mitigate something like that? Plant a bunch of bushes and not trim them up?
So those would be freshwater wetland impacts. So what we would do is, so we could, let's say, an agricultural area, kind of like down by Elk River, we would dig out the fill, plant appropriate species, get down to where you touch water, and then you make a wetland. Because that ag field there is filled with fill, and it, at one point in time, was a wetland. So that's what we did on the waterfront trail, is behind the Blue Ox. That's the mitigation area there for the waterfront trail going from Truesdale all the way up to Tidd Street. So we had to build like an acre and a quarter of saltwater marsh. And so that marsh was created by, we bought that property from Security National. They were very generous in getting that to us. And then we dug out all the fill there and created that salt marsh.
So you the attempt is to try to take it back to what it was before it was developed?
Yep. Yeah, so we had impacts there of about a quarter of an acre. So we had to mitigate at a 4-to-1 ratio. So those quarter of an acre resulted in us having to build a little bit over a quarter of an acre of a salt marsh. And so once you build it, you plant it, then you have to monitor it for 5 years and make sure that it meets all these criteria so that it can demonstrate that it replaces in kind what you impact.
Where did they come up with the 4-to-1 ratio?
We did that to play nice.
Oh, okay.
We had the funding there, and when we went after the grant funding, we made sure that we had the funding so we could not have to do the back and forth and delay the project. I mean, that project was pretty damn quick compared to most projects as far as, you know, government getting stuff done. We started the waterfront trail idea a long time ago, but the actual, you know, work for it didn't start till 2013, and we were done by 2017. So it was, doing that avoided a lot of back and forth with regulatory agencies. We could have probably gotten away with less because the wetlands that we did impact were really degraded wetlands and not very functional, but we figured we'd just play nice.
So does that carry over to the next project that the city is are nice guys, or is it item by item?
No, it's project by project. Sometimes they claim precedence, but no, it's project by project, and how you have your, you know, biological experts describe the impacts and the benefits of it, you know. So, yeah, we do projects for, like, we're looking at the small project. We're at a one-to-one ratio for eelgrass impacts on that, and it just depends on the project.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, there's a lot of different pressures that are starting to happen now for development, you know, kind of so that the greater Eureka area can actually participate in the economy again, which would be just kind of a neat little change. What kind of mid-length and long-term plans does the city have in order to be either able to accommodate or direct or just to be able to do some of these various projects, whether it's private or whether it's public?
So that's a great segue. We're actually this week going to next week going to council with the waterfront specific plan. And what it is a review of our core area of Eureka, which we're kind of defining as, you know, from A Street all the way up to M Street and over to 7th Street, that general area, and looking at infill and density projects, you know, mainly focusing on housing and those type of things. But what this will do is it'll identify private and public lands that'll allow for certain types of projects, housing, commercial, whatever it may be, and then come up with a pre-permitted CEQA. So those properties that are under this that are identified as potential for development will be pre-permitted under CEQA so that when a developer comes in, wants to do something there, that step is already taken away, and they just got to concentrate on putting plans in and building the project.
Now, we hear coastal development, but in the past we've also heard hyphen coastal dependent. Is that still a factor in there? Is that a zoning issue? Is that a state issue? I mean, where does that enter into the equation?
It's a huge issue. And so what we're doing, we're going through our local coastal program update. We've submitted that to the Coastal Commission, and we're asking for some changes to coastal dependent industrial zoning. We have way too much of it, and a lot of it is in places where it can't even serve its purpose because it's supposed to be waterfront dependent. So we have coastal dependent industrial properties that are three or four parcels off of the water. So those things need to be addressed through this update, and we're going to address them through this update. We're also looking at some changes to the allowable uses on coastal dependent industrial. You know, the Harbor District did their short-term fix where they allow other uses for only a certain period of time. But in our opinion, it needs to be much more than that because you're not going to get a lot of investment for something that's only going to last 10 years. You know, you need
right.
to make sure that that investment's going to be, you know, pay off down the road and that they're going to be able to stay there for long periods of time. So we're looking at rezoning some of that CDI property that's not appropriate to be zoned that way. And we're also looking at either other allowable uses or certain percentages of certain uses on CDI. That's been a big a deterrent to some of the companies that wanted to come in here that are looking that we had space for, but because they weren't coastal dependent, they weren't allowed to fit there.
So it's really not the city's ability to make definition. It's more what the state allows the city to have as far as designation within their own jurisdiction?
Well, we have our own jurisdiction, but when we do these local coastal program updates, it has to be reviewed and approved by the Coastal Commission.
And those are good for...
Once that's reviewed and approved by them, then we're good going forward. I mean, it's appealable if we interpret something that they feel is not interpreted correctly, it's appealable to them. But typically, the rest of the permitting, once the local coastal program update is complete, goes through us, and we make the determination.
Too much fun, too much fun. Hey, have a safe Labor Day, okay?
All right, you guys too. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Miles. See everybody tomorrow morning. Bye.